You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll hear from a Potrero Hill neighborhood activist about building a safe and drama-free community in public housing.
When I'm in board meetings and different meetings like that, whether it's at City Hall, whatever, whenever I introduce myself, I always introduce myself as Azuri Peace Green, and I'm a resident of public housing. Don't never be ashamed of where you live at.
She's done just about everything, from being a truck driver to running for office.
A couple people told me that I shouldn't run because I lived in public housing. So that tipped the scale of, okay, I'm definitely running.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. On previous editions of Civic, we've covered the local election, how the city's biggest housing bond would help complete a years-long renovation of public housing communities, and the story of how a neighborhood went after a package thief. Today we're talking with someone who has a deep understanding of all of these topics. Azuri Peace Green is the Executive Director of CARE, Community Awareness Resources Entity. She's also a former candidate for District 10 Supervisor and a Potrero Terrace resident. She has lots of additional roles, but in the many ways she works as an activist and a spokesperson for the underserved. Azuri, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I just listed a lot of things about you. You also bring to this work the perspective of being a formerly homeless person.
Yes.
Recovering addict.
Yes.
You've built up your current career and have worked as also a phlebotomist, a certified nurse assistant, a class A truck driver, and now you're a master of public administration and working on a PhD. Can you tell a little bit, can you talk a little bit about your path to where you are now?
So my path has taken all kinds of twists and turns, and I believe it was for me to just get to this point in life. A lot of trials and tribulations, and I look and embrace everything. So I have this saying, you have to embrace your past in order to understand your present to see your future. So that is mine. I claim that. I created it. I grew up in a loving home. With my mom, and she is actually my backbone. She is the strength through everything, and so much things that she's accomplished that helped me to get to where I am. And then living in my community and seeing the different levels of poverty, and at the same time the resilience that's in the people that's in my community, has really helped to shape me. My community helped me get clean and sober, and my community helps me stay clean and sober. Youngsters are the reasons why I went back to school. And I tell them this all the time. It's because of them from Connecticut and Missouri Street, all the youngsters, they are the reasons why I went back to school to get my degrees. Because I had the street knowledge. I needed the book knowledge to be able to do a lot more things in community. I continue to do this work because it's very much needed, and I'm very humbled to be able to do this work. And so not getting a big head. There's a lady who I still pull the weeds and sweep her driveway and her stairs. And her name is Mama Mel. She runs the merry-go-round daycare center. And I still do the service for her. Keeps me grounded. Because I used to walk around with a broom and a backpack and sweeping driveways and pulling weeds and washing people's cars. And it keeps you humble. So, yeah.
San Francisco can't stop talking about solving homelessness. When are we going to solve homelessness? What comes to mind for you when you hear that? How did you end up exiting homelessness, for lack of a better term?
It's crazy because people don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, I think I'll be homeless today. It's like a domino effect. And due to different circumstances, whether it's you lose your job, you get into the drug scene, alcohol, it just depends. It depends on the person. You become homeless, and then some people, it's embarrassment, and so they don't want their family to know, or they just go into such a deep depression that it's hard to come out of. I am a go-getter, and so I had that foundation in me from my mom and my dad and my uncle. And so once I was homeless, I had places to go, but me and my husband, we couldn't go together, and so we stayed on the streets and doing the drugs and the alcohol and so forth. But then it came to a time where it's like, wait a minute, it's time to wake up. And that's where my higher power came in. And I remember calling to get on the list for housing to find out I was already on the list. And I was like, dang, I had been on the list for so long, I forgot I was even on the list. And so And then the nice lady over the phone told me to go down to City Hall and put down two of my federal preferences. Because there's actually three, but she said only use two, don't use all three. And one is because I had, if you have children, if you're homeless, and I think the other one is if you're a senior. And so I did that. And the next thing I knew, I came up on the list. And I was staying in a shelter at the time. And so I picked Patrol because I had a choice between Patrol and Hunters Point. And since I used to run through Hunters Point using it and everything, and I didn't know anybody in Patrol, I picked Patrol. So then I went from the shelter, and the shelter helped me a lot as well, because at Episcopal Sanctuary, the lady held on to my check, my move-in, the money order, and she held that for me for 2 months before I moved in. I was like, I don't care what I tell you, what lie I tell you, whatever, don't give me this money order until I'm going to get my key. And so she did. And so along the way, I've had help to be able to get me from living on the streets to into my housing. But a lot of people, they don't know, where they don't speak the language, or there's embarrassment, or they just don't know what to do. And then so many times you go for help, and people will treat you like you're not worthy, and like you're asking for something that you're not entitled to. So a lot of people's pride gets hurt, their feelings get hurt, they're made to feel less than, and you don't want to keep going through that feeling. And so that turns a lot of people away. And then if you're stuck in your addiction or in your own trauma that's happening inside your own brain, inside your mind, then a lot of people aren't going to get up and go from one street to 15 blocks away. Some people are disabled. Some just don't know where to go. So bringing the services to people, but then walking them through it. Some people have been homeless for so long, they don't even know how to sleep in a bed, let alone how to pay rent and pay utilities. And so you have to monitor people when they get into an SRO or an apartment or whatever it is, and then keep up with them for at least a year of handholding, of paying your rent, this and that, and showing people the way. And then it's real expensive to live in San Francisco. If I didn't live in public housing, hell, I wouldn't be able to live in San Francisco. Well, I'd be able to pay my rent, but I wouldn't be able to eat or have a phone bill or anything like that. I almost got to a point where I almost got evicted out of public housing, and thank goodness that I had turned in this one piece of paper that proved that I didn't have an income, and then the management took the time and the patience to really work through it, which was a blessing. And now I know, pay the rent, and then everything else will fall in place. But a lot of people don't understand that. And then you have people that are, we don't want homelessness, but at the same time, we don't want a navigation center in our community, because in our community it's going to bring more crime. Sorry, that is not true.
In fact, I think a recent look at the data showed that that's not true, that
It's
crime
definitely
actually
not true.
drops.
It definitely does. Because if you look at it, if you have a navigation center, then a person knows where they're going to sleep at night. Some of them provide meals. Just having that stabilized place to stay, then people can start working on the other things. There's a lot of people that live in navigation centers that have jobs. There are a lot of people that are homeless that have jobs. They just fell on hard times. People get up, go to work every day. They just can't get out of living on the street because everything is so expensive. So with the navigation center, it gives a person a foundation. And then lets them build from there. So all you people that's talking about, wow, my gosh, I'm tired of the homeless, well, let them build a navigation center. And you can't be picky. And then what irritates me is that something happens to somebody and a homeless person has done it. And this is the reason why we can't have the navigation center in our community. It's too close to the schools. It's like, stop. I've been homeless. I've been attacked. And there was no navigation center around. I've been raped, and there was no navigation center around. I've been mugged, no navigation center around. So let's take a step back and stop letting fear dictate what you know is right.
Can you talk a little bit more about shelters? Because you just mentioned an anecdote about the woman who held your check for you, and it sounded like the shelters were generally a positive experience, or at least better than on the street. But we also currently have not enough space in the shelters to meet demand. There's more than 1,000 people on the wait list to get into shelters every day.
You also have to monitor the shelters, because when I first moved in, basically, into the shelter, I had to stay downstairs and we had a mat. There used to be bullies in the shelter. I found myself protecting a lot of the seniors. And just small things of taking somebody's blanket. Hell, it's cold at night in the shelters. So taking somebody's blanket or trying to take their money. And a lot of people are scared of shelters. Opening the shelters with the lens of a trauma-informed lens and educating the staff that have to work there and understanding that people come in with all different type of problems. Some come in there and they're fine. They just need a place to stay. But some have mental issues. And so being able to deal with that, a lot of people that work in the shelters aren't equipped because they haven't been educated. And so that's what's very important as well. So you can have shelters, you have to have the shelter beds and adequate shelter beds. And then also having a staff to be able to monitor it. And then make some of the shelters to where you don't have to leave at 7 o'clock in the morning. Do you know how hard it is to leave a shelter at 7 o'clock in the morning and have to take all your stuff? Especially, say it's freezing cold outside or it's raining outside. So we have to readjust how we look at shelters in per se and saying that it should be that shelter. And that doesn't mean shelter stops at 7 a.m.
We're talking about a lot of things here that go into the realm of public policy. And you ran for District 10 supervisor in 2018.
Yes.
There were 7 candidates in that race, but 3 of them, yourself included, were women running without accepting large donations and
yes.
who were coming at politics from kind of an unusual perspective. In fact, you said at the time, I don't speak like a politician. Please slap me if I start sounding like one.
Yeah, hell yes. Can I say hell?
Yes. Does that still apply? And what words are not in your vocabulary? Like, what does it mean to not talk like a politician?
Making promises that I can't keep. I mean, I was not sure of everything you could do as a supervisor, right? So why would I promise and then I can't fulfill that promise? Saying, I'm going to end homeless. No, I'm not. Because to be honest with you, homeless will never be totally ended. There will be some people who will forever stay on the streets. That's just what they do. Like, there will always be a car thieves. There will always be addicts. There will always be alcoholics. Like, there will never be 100% of something unless it's just extinct. A couple of people told me that I shouldn't run because I lived in public housing. So that tipped the scale of, okay, I'm definitely running. Because I want our young people to realize that they have a voice, no matter where you live, and that they can make a difference. It's their time now. It's time for them to go to school, get their education, think about politics, learn about politics, learn about what's important to them, and then be boisterous. And be boisterous in the correct manner.
What's the correct manner?
The correct manner is that changing things from the inside. Get inside, you know, run for office, get on the school board, get on the water board, run for supervisor, hell, become president. You can't do no worse than what we got now. You can only go up from here. Yes, I said that, meant it too. I don't care.
That's not terribly controversial here.
So remember where you came from. See, a lot of people, they get into positions and then they forget when they were, whether it's homeless or living in public housing or whatever, they forget. That's why I like London Breed. She has never changed her stripes the whole time from living in public housing to now she's mayor. She's always remained the same type of person. She greets people. She's, you know, accommodating and so forth. She's never changed her stripes. Don't get into office and then or any place and then all of a sudden you forget and then you look down on people. So I want young people to understand that be proud of where you come from. When I'm in board meetings and different meetings like that, whether it's at City Hall, whatever, whenever I introduce myself, I always introduce myself as Azuri Peace Green. And then it was when I was working for Bridge Housing, it would be community builder. And then now that is CARE, Executive Director of CARE. But I always say, and I'm a resident of public housing, or I live in public housing, Petrel Hill Public Housing. Don't never be ashamed of where you live at. Be proud of where you live because that's your home. if I won, great. Then I had a lot of ideas. Even though I didn't win, I also still won because it empowered other people. Some people had never, they were like, I went and registered to vote just so I could vote for you. Then there's some young people who are like, you know what? I'm running for a school president. I'm running for this. It's like, so yes, I didn't win the supervisor race, but I won the big race. And the big race was to empower other people and educate. So I did my job.
We'll hear more from our guest, Uzuri Pease Green, in just a moment. You've been listening to Civics from the San Francisco Public Press.
KSFP would like to thank the awesome, forward-thinking institutional supporters of the San Francisco Public Press, including the San Francisco Foundation, the James Irvine Foundation, the Reva and David Logan Foundation, Craig Newmark Philanthropies, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, the Fund for Nonprofit News at the Miami Foundation, the Fund for Investigative Journalism, the California Endowment, the Center for Cultural Innovation, the Institute for Nonprofit News, and the local independent online news publishers. This is KSFP LP San Francisco, 102.5 FM.
Welcome back to Civic. Let's get back to this conversation with Uzuri Pease Green, Executive Director of CARE and a Potrero Hill activist. I want to ask you a little bit more about this perception of living in public housing, because I'm a little bit astounded that more than one person told you not to run for office because you live in public housing.
Right.
So that to me speaks to a certain preconceived notion that apparently is less uncommon than it should be about public housing.
Right.
And we also recently talked with journalist Lauren Smiley, who wrote a story about what actually ended up happening to Janaea Fairley after neighbors caught her stealing Amazon deliveries from porches in Potrero Hill. She was a public housing resident until over the course of several law enforcement contacts, incarcerations. I think also she was forced to go to rehab a few times, and she was evicted from her home in her absence.
Right.
And you told Lauren in that story that people in Potrero Hill blamed people who live in public housing for everything. Mm. You said specifically they stepped on a banana peel and would be like, the projects put it there.
That's true.
What is going on here?
So for Geneva, it's crazy because she would have stayed under the radar had the people not taken pictures of her having her child help her. And that's what started the uproar.
Mm.
Oh my God, that sent people into a tizzy on next door. I mean, you had people even threatening to smack her in the head with a baseball bat. And I was like, oh my gosh. There were several times when I told her, I was like, hey, look, you might want to leave them packages alone. They have your picture posted. And if you're on next door, anybody, any and everybody can see it. But after a while, I'm like, okay, well, there's nothing else I can tell you. I'm only going to tell you three times. And after that, that's on you. But when I first got invited to next door, it was a lot of rude and disrespectful people on there. Then I got on there and I realized that I couldn't respond in the way that people were responding. So I had to respond in a more, call it politically correct, more educated, more down to earth, all wrapped into one, right? And so eventually the people like weeded themselves out and got a different perception. Some left and then some just got a different perception. Because you gotta remember, people were always afraid of the unknown. And the myth was that everybody that lived in the projects, we called it public housing, were just druggies and alcoholics, and they were lazy, and they didn't want to do anything, and they just, you know, they're barbarians. In actuality, you have a lot of educated people that live in public housing, people that go to work every day, people that go to school, people that want the same thing for their kids, which is to live better and have better education.
And you have tons of kids living in public
housing. Exactly. But a lot of people didn't understand. So there's a difference. So a lot of our kids, and I say our because, you know, my kids are included because we live here, is that, yes, there is violence, but there is violence everywhere. The thing is that it's more shown on the news when it comes to the public housing than it is in the surrounding community. Because, like I had told them, there was an incident one time where people were up in arms because this lady had gotten shot. Nobody was up in arms about the three young men that had just gotten shot a couple of days before. So it all depended on your ethnic background. And then just all the different things. And then people hadn't come in to the public housing, so they really didn't know people that lived there, per se. And so then I challenged some folks from Susie Loftus, who I was at a board of at the police commission, and I challenged her. I was like, come in and just see and just walk around. And she did. And then I challenged some of the parents at Star King. And they did. And so then it just started opening up this communication. And then Bridge, what happened is that they started doing all these different community building meetings. And they just started doing all these different focus groups as well.
That's
and
Bridge Housing, for anybody not keeping track.
Right. Bridge Housing, who is the developer of the Petrel Hill Public Housing. So when they started doing these little gatherings, people started interacting and they were able to see, oh my God, there are human beings that live in a public housing. Really, we are human. And so that opened up the door to people to really start, you know, conversating. Now you got people jogging through down Dakota Street. You got people jogging down Texas Street. But it's just a different perception. Now, yes, there's still bad apples, but there's bad apples everywhere. Like, wherever you go, there's bad apples.
These conversations that started to change the discourse, they were happening in person, right? Not online.
No, a lot of them. Well, some of them were happening online, but a lot of the things that would change the perception as well was happening in person.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were able to start. But then a lot of people in the public housing was thinking that people that lived outside the public housing was rich and they had all this money. And some of them are living pillar to, you know, like, they're barely able to pay the rent and put a little bit of food. They still got to go get food boxes their doggone selves. Some people are wealthier than others, granted, inside and outside the public housing. It's just the perception of everybody changed. And so, like we do a toy giveaway, and we were going to move it and put it up at the rec center. And people were like, don't do that. They were like, why? When this is something that's good that happens inside the public housing, people drive by and they're like, what's that line? They're like, somebody's giving out toys in the public housing? Yes. That's amazing. And it's a lot of good people that live there.
Let's talk more about that, because you're wearing a shirt right now that says Community Awareness Resources Entity, Drama-Free, Stress-Free, and you're the
yes.
executive director of
yes.
this group, CARE.
Yes.
It works with a variety of nonprofits and city departments. It works to ensure safety for Potrero Terrace residents and a whole bunch of other things. How do you create an environment that fosters neighborhood safety and being drama-free and stress-free?
So, and we got to add in Annex, because in Potrero Hill, the public housing is real. People say Terrace and Annex, but it's one Potrero Hill. I'll probably get some backlash for that later, but that's okay. So one of the things is creating safety is that at all our events that we do is all in collaboration with other community partners. And it's also in collaboration with SFPD and the fire department. And this is for people just to be able to communicate on a positive level. So nobody gets arrested at any of our events. This is year six. We've only had one person escorted from our events in the whole time we've been doing them. And we do it because of the fact we do the events to where everybody has to feel safe. So my shirt says drama-free, stress-free, but we have a sign that actually says drama-free, stress-free zone. So case in point, we were doing an event on Dakota, right there in the middle of Dakota Street. And there was a guy and a girl, they were arguing. And so when I pulled up, I was like, okay, this is a drama-free, stress-free zone. You can go up the street, down the street, or across the street. You just can't argue right here because we have to, you know, keep this a safe place for everybody. They respected that, and they walked down the street. And then he shot her in the leg. And it's just the irony of people were like, what would have happened if you had not have told them that? And so this is why we really enforce the neutrals. It's a neutral zone also. So you have people who don't like each other, right? You have Missouri side doesn't like the Connecticut side. Connecticut side don't like 25th, whatever. But when you come to the event, it's a neutral zone. And a lot of the guys and girls, they actually respect that. And so there is no issue. There's no gun violence. There's no fighting. None of that. It is just a day of peace and enjoying each other's company. People's kids are there. Their nephews are there. So it's like, that. So when you say, how do you do it? It's just because we do it with community. And then we're very transparent. We're very transparent in all the things that we do. Because all we're doing is just working with other people to keep the community safe for all our kids. Because the kids need to be able to walk up and down the street, go outside and play, and not have to worry about, are they going to get shot or are they going to get run over or anything like that. They have enough worrying about the school shootings. They don't need to worry about it inside their communities. And so, again, this comes with community help. We couldn't do this without the community at all. And because we have the Chief Scott is in our office once a month for community to be able to come in, have a conversation with them for that hour. We do our community events. We're doing a community Thanksgiving dinner. Whether it's raining or not, we're still doing it. This Wednesday, we're doing a toy drive where there's other community members now are partnering with us and then to do the toy drives, as well as we have people that's sending in donations. Also that, and you don't pre-register and you don't have to have your address. You just have to be a kid. You just be a kid, stand there, and we do it from zero all the way up to the age of 18. So we have something for the teenagers, the older ones, the whole thing. But again, it's in fostering community. And there are some people who will always talk bad about the CARE program. Hell, they talk bad about Jesus. And I mean, we're all still here. But it's called resilience. And it's as long as you know that you're doing the right thing, then don't worry about it.
Is there anything else that I did not give you a chance to talk about that you want to say?
I just want to encourage you, youth, to take advantage of public press. Find out if there's a way for you to have your own station. And if there is, make it a station that you can be proud of. Having that youth voice, your voice matters. So it's time for you to start taking the opportunities to have a voice out there in this world, in San Francisco and further. I hope to see everybody at the Community Thanksgiving Dinner, 801 Arkansas Street, from 11 to 2 this Wednesday. I don't give a dag burn if it's storming outside. We are having everything inside, plenty of food, fun. Just come out and just enjoy yourself. All right.
Thank you so much for coming here and talking with me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And if I offended anybody, I apologize. If your feelings are hurt, I didn't mean to, but I do mean what I said.
That was Azuri Pease Green. She's the executive director of the Community Awareness Resources Entity. You've been listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press.
Civic is a production of the San Francisco Public Press, sfpublicpress.org. Your host is Laura Wenis. Producer and contributor, Mel Baker. The publisher of the San Francisco Public Press is Lila LaHood. Executive Director, Michael Stoll. Thanks for listening.